income tax professionals. Now with 9 locations in the Hunter. It's KOFM's tax return.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, Anthony at Singleton is going to have a crack at the cash today. Hello, Anthony.
How you going?
Good.
All right, mate. Have you played along yourself and figured where you would have dived out, where you wouldn't?
Yes, I know where I'm going to stop.
Okay.
Just hope it gets it.
A lot of people have practiced this sort of... All right, Anthony, that's the idea. If you just joined us, the tax man throws numbers at Anthony, money numbers, that is. If Anthony says stop, he keeps what he's thrown out. If not, before the decline, are you ready?
Yes.
Let's go.
$80. $150. $200. $220. $222. $223. $250. $300.
Stop.
Oh. $300.
So, Anthony, that's where you wanted to pull up.
No.
You just got nervous.
Yeah, I think you did.
I got nervous.
Oh, what were you planning on? What were you hoping for?
500.
Oh, Anthony.
Let's see if it went to 500, you reckon?
Yeah, let's see if you've done the right thing, mate.
$305. $312. $350. $376. $382.12. $399. $400. $401. $450. $550. $850. $863. $900. $1,100.
$1,250. We can hear the groans, Anthony.
$300, good.
That's good for you. What made you deviate from your plan, though? Was it that annoying music that makes you unsettled?
Yes, just got to me.
Never mind.
$300 coming your way, Anthony. Perfect. Not too bad. Thanks to the income tax professionals. Do what you love. Let ITP do your taxes. That was KOFM's tax return.
That's the music the boss plays when he asks us questions about things we don't want to do.
It does. It makes you spill, doesn't it?
Yeah. Can you guys go and host this crappy thing? You've got 10 seconds to answer and that music starts and we panic.
We're going to play again 11 and 3 o'clock. Today here at KUFM, it's Tenure and Steve.
You know, since this story in Chiang Rai started with the 12 boys and their coach trapped inside the mountain, and then we learned how they were going to get them out, and that is with the help of very experienced, in fact 90-odd, cave divers, we've been fascinated by the process.
Getting your head around what they're going through, and particularly when they're going through points where they've got to push the air tank in front of them and then through, like you just get a body through.
Yeah.
We won't do that on dry land out of fear.
Oh, apart from anything else, these kids couldn't even swim.
Right.
So we thought we'd catch up with our next guest. It's Professor Peter Rogers, who is a cave diving expert. Good morning, Professor.
Morning, Tanya. Morning, Steve.
Now, Peter, I guess there's so many questions, but if I can get to the one on the rescue, the biggest fear I was wondering when, they're talking about a static line, obviously, and then having these boys on tow behind a Navy SEAL, is the biggest fear of, in those tight situations, one of the boys panicking?
Look, panic's an issue, and can I say that just from a technical point of view, some of the information that's, I guess, spreading around probably isn't exactly how it's happening.
Right.
What they will be doing, so to answer your question about panic, absolutely, they will be taking all possible stress points off the boys. So leaving them almost nothing to do, and leaving all of the navigating and the decision making and the control over the air supplies with the experienced cave divers.
Oh, okay. And I thought you were going to then go on about some of the misnomers that were floating around about this. Sorry.
Well, okay. I mean, there's lots of different little things. The way, I mean, firstly, they're using air, not oxygen. Secondly, the tanks aren't on their backs. They'll be on their sides. They'll be side mounted. Thirdly, the cave's warm. It's not cold. There's no hypothermia issues. So there's lots of little bits and pieces
Okay.
coming out just from Because, look, I mean, it's difficult for the media. They're being kept at arm's length.
Yep.
And they're probably chasing off on the internet and stuff for, you know, for cave diving background.
Sure.
And trying to work out what's happening. But that particular cave, the techniques that they'll be using are fairly well established. And what they'll do with the boys is the boys will have almost no equipment on them at all, apart from possibly a light wetsuit. They may not even have that. The water, it sounds as if the water's pretty warm. And the diver with the tanks on the side will just go forward through the water with the boy holding onto his back or possibly his lower back, you know, onto his belt around his waist so that he can drop down just behind the diver. And the squeeze they're talking about, 38 centimetres, which is actually quite a lot of space. If you get a tape measure and, you know, open a door, your living room door, 38 centimetres, you'll find you can fit through that gap quite easily.
Okay.
And the divers now have established, they've done all the risky stuff, they've established the best way through the cave, they've got a fixed line in, and they're just swimming straight out, towing the boy.
So when we started hearing stories about, gee, these boys can't swim, they've got to teach them how to dive, is that just a bit of a beat-up? Like, you know, if you're just pulling someone along behind you and keeping them calm, did you guys in your business go, well, that's not that big a deal?
It's a big deal. I mean, let's not underestimate what's been achieved. It's a huge deal. But at the same time, cave diving's all about calm, methodical planning and not taking risks. But that doesn't make good reporting.
Yeah. But so still, having said that, I think that, you know, in those 38 centimetres, if you have a kid that suddenly starts panicking, it's not going to be a lot of room.
No. But look, they're pretty... So just analyse the kids. They went into the cave, I think it was a birthday treat for one of them. So, and they got a long way in before the rain. So they're obviously pretty keen and they're comfortable underground. They're keen to go caving. They're not concerned. They've gone through most of those sections before the water filled them.
Right.
So they know that they can fit through them easily in their brains.
Yep.
And then they've survived 10 days. Their teacher's done an amazing job holding them together. They've survived 10 days isolated in the dark. And so they've got their act together.
I said yesterday, Peter, that in some ways, on a psychological level, better than be 12-year-olds than 30-year-olds that can figure out what could go wrong.
I think, you know, that you're right. I mean, boys aged, whatever they are, I think 11 to 16, are pretty resilient things. And I think they will look to the adults. And if the adults say to them, this is easy, you can do it, they'll do it. And clearly that's happened with 8 of them already.
Yeah.
They've come out without an issue. So I think, I probably won't get asked back, but I don't think it's as dramatic now as it was 2 or 3 days ago.
Can we just ask, and obviously you would not have the finer details, but when you heard of the Navy SEAL that perished due to lack of air, How could that have happened? What do you think could have happened?
So what's happened there is that the military don't train in caves. There's no military imperative to train in caves. So whereas Navy SEALs are trained in all sorts of things that you can't even begin to think about and are incredibly fit and capable young men, they're not actually given any technical training in caving because, as I said, there's no military reason for them to be, you know, attacking caves of this nature in their military setup. So in the mind of the government, who knows nothing about, or the organisers who doesn't know much about cave diving, they think, well, the SEALs, they're the closest we've got, get them in there.
Right.
And then they started saying, well, actually, they would have said, we actually need proper cave diving rescue people, and they started bringing them in from all around the world because they exist. And so what's happened is that basically they've made an error. It sounds like they've made an error with air consumption, and he set off on a return dive without sufficient air. And it's easy to do when you're in a stressful situation like that and you're concentrating on the rescue and not concentrating on yourself. And that's why I believe now they've what they'll have is the cave divers leading the rescue, with the support from the Navy SEALs. So the news is reporting that, you know, between rescues, there's nothing happening in the cave, but there's a lot happening there at the moment. There'll be the Navy SEALs will be pulling all the used scuba tanks from the rescue, the latest rescue, pulling them out, filling them again, and getting them back down to the water's edge, ready for the next rescue, so that the divers will just walk in later today. They'll just walk in and then pick the tanks up and start the dive.
All right, well, thanks for giving us an insight into that. It's nice to hear from a different angle.
Yeah, appreciate your time.
No, they've done an amazing job, and hopefully it'll all be over in the next day or so.
Thank you, Peter. There's Professor Peter Rogers, cave diving expert.
How fascinating.
There you go. It's no big fat hairy deal.
It's Tenure and Steve, KUFM. It's 8:31.
We're big fans of dogs.
Do you know, I spied a little kookaburra outside our studio door, not in our building, but out through another window, sitting on a building.
Yep.
And I said, kookaburra, what are you doing here? He didn't answer me. But it did get me thinking.
He did mention gay his life must be, though.
He did. Yeah. There'll be lots of people going, "Whoa, Steve's saying that on the radio. You can't say that these days."
Goes with the song. Trust me, folks.
Anyway, it reminded me of that time I was up in the Upper Allen having a barbecue, and a kookaburra swooped down and, swear to God, took the sausage right off the griddle.
Yes.
Must be a heat-proof beak they have.
Yeah.
Because he didn't even hesitate to take that sausage off.
And they're so well trained to it now, aren't they? They know.
Oh, they're amazing.
So what if they don't even just sit there and eat it in front of you and go, "You know, I'm protected, mate."
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we laugh all the time.
Yeah. And I've actually seen kookaburras as well steal bacon off a plate and smack it against the tree as if they've got a mouse and they're trying to kill it.
Now, the best bird swoop I've ever seen, and we all know about throwing a chip to the seagulls and nobbies, right? Oh, you ought to try them in America, where the seagulls are as big as a plane.
Oh, they're huge.
Yeah. And we're at Santa Monica Jetty, and there are signs.
Yeah.
About, you know. And my mate Glenn was looking over, and he's just enjoying, "Oh, I'm in Santa Monica," and he had the hot dog in his hand, I swear, and we were two steps back from him. And he was just having a moment to himself going, "A hot dog in America at Santa Monica Pier, does it get any better than..." And this massive seagull took the whole hot dog. Like, the whole hot dog. And he was standing there, and he still had his hand up with it empty. And he's, like, looking, going, he had no idea what just happened, but we saw it. He just, all he remembers is looking over, to, and the hot dog was gone.
Was he cranky?
He was ripable. Instead of Trevor and I laughing our heads off going, "You should have seen the size of that seagull." He goes, "I saw nothing." And it was just massive.
Yeah, little Cessna.
Little Cessna came in.
They're like three or four times bigger than normal Cessna.
Yeah, they are. And they're grey and they're mean.
Yeah.
But that was the best swoop steal I've ever seen.
Well, can we throw it out? Because it is school holidays. There has to be other stories. We've got to lighten it up. We've talked about boys in caves being rescued this morning.
Yes, I know.
So can we please lighten it up?
All right.
Throw it out. Do you have a thieving animal story?
4942-1029 when animals steal your food. We'd love to hear your examples. 4942-1029.
I've got a closer one.
Which one?
Back to the boxer. I was on the watching TV, right, but I'm on the lounge. I had an apple, and I had one bite of my apple, and then, so imagine I'm back on the lounge, and then I've just put my hand down to, you know, rested it down, and I heard...
Gone.
No, he just took a bite.
Oh,
did he? And I had to pause for a minute and go, "Do I keep eating it?"
Oh, yeah. No, it's your baby.
No.
You couldn't?
But he did. He had a bite of my apple and ate it, mind you.
I thought
was pretty good.
So did you give him the rest then?
Yes.
Yeah.
I said, "There you go, mate, have that." But just to hear that...
Oh, that's awesome.
Our number's 4942-1029. The phones have lit up, Tenure and Steve.
Yep. Nick's just having her own brekkie this morning. She's our little animal that steals food.
She swoops.
We've got Paul.
Hello,
a packet
Paul.
Of chips. She's
How
on
you
it.
Going?
Good. Tell us a story about a thieving animal.
Well, I'm going back quite a few years. We're up at Chichester Dam. We had my wife's family over from New Zealand, and there were a bunch of kingfishers further down. My sister-in-law was about to put a piece of chicken in her mouth, and the kingfisher came straight through and took it out of her hand.
They're the best ones,
I'm not
Paul.
Kidding. I was standing there watching her. And then, being from New Zealand, I threw the carcass on the ground, and they all came and flocked, and she did the haka around them to kind of try and get rid of them.
Thanks, Paul. I don't think that's racially allowed, but anyway.
Hello, Linda.
Linda.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, Linda. When animals thieve.
Well, my 50th birthday party, you know, family full, house full, fancy dress party. Birthday cake already cut, thankfully, and it was put inside on the table. About half an hour later, my Labrador was seen, all hands up onto the table, with his face fair in the middle of the cake. And sit there, put his face down, and my friend's gone, Vito, and he's just hid in the cake.
In the cake.
Yeah. You know how they do it? They can't see them.
Yeah, yep. I love it.
Nice. Thank you, Linda.
Thanks, Linda. That's awesome. We've got Cherie here.
Hello, Cherie.
Hi, how are you going?
What animal attacked, mate?
Kookaburra landed on my barbecue, on the hot plate, tried to take the chicken. I hit him with the tongs. He came back and then danced on the side of the barbecue with 4 feet.
Oh, the poor little thing.
I felt very sorry for him, but I didn't give him any more chicken.
Hit him with the tongs. Mate.
I did, yeah. Well, I liked my chicken.
It's a wonder he didn't come back with his lawyer.
Yeah. Thanks, Cherie. Trudy, when thieving animals strike, what was it?
Yes, it was a sheep.
A sheep?
Ooh.
A sheep, yes.
Where?
I found farm when my kids were younger. We went there for the day, sat down to have lunch, got my daughter a pie, and a sheep actually jumped up on the table and took the pie.
Thanks, Trudy.
A good Aussie sheep.
The great thing is just nothing, you just look and go, well, that happened.
Yeah, you know.
That's what you can do, is there?
Oh, I love it. Anyway, I'm still curious as to what that kookaburra was doing in the city here on the high rises. There's no trees here anymore.
Do you guys notice whenever you see a kookaburra, the next day it definitely rains? So we saw it. Was that yesterday we saw the kookaburra?
Mm-hmm.
Today it's going to rain. Science.
Rightio.
Pretty sure.
That's all right. Okay. Professor Sumner Miller over there with his glass and a half.
I can't wait to tonight when we see Gavin Morris interviewing a kookaburra.
Steve.
What's the outlook?
Rain. KFM.